We're good?
We're good.
Will the real Mashiach please rise? Well, we're going to begin today in the midst of our father Jacob's blessings. And as we talked about in our class last night, this was a most unique event in history. In fact, never before had a person had the opportunity to devote his final moments on this terrestrial earth to speaking to his children and to inspiring them. And to rebuking them, and to blessing them. And that's what happens. He calls them all together, and maybe he wants to say one thing, and he ends up saying something else, but that's a subject for another class. And then he begins to speak, and he addresses Reuven, the firstborn son. And his words are not kind. Very, very harsh rebuke of Reuven, who is impetuous, like running water. He says, you will not be foremost because you profaned my bed. You mixed into my private affairs. Shimon and Levi, you are partners in crime. You destroyed a city. He says, you use weapons of violence. I don't want to be part of your conspiracy. I want to have no part in your assemblage because you acted in anger. Could be you didn't do the wrong thing. You may have had justification, but you acted in anger, and that's unacceptable. He curses their rage, for it is fierce. He curses their fury, for it is harsh. He doesn't curse them. And he says, I'm going to scatter Shimon all over the place. Whose turn is it now? We went through Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, Judah. Now, Judah hears what his father had to say to his first three brothers. And he's like, I'm out of here. I'm checking out. He said, now he's going to rebuke me for the dubious affair with Tamar. And Yehuda starts shying away. Chapter 49, verse 8. Yehuda, Judah, Ata Yoiducha Achecha. You will be praised by your brothers. Yodcha ba'oyref ayvecha. Your hand, figuratively speaking, is going to be upon the neck of your enemies who flee you. Yishtachvu lecha bnei me avicha. The sons of your father, will bow, prostrate before you. What's going on here? What happened? How come Reuven, Shimon, and Levi got such harsh rebuke? And Yehuda, who seems in the biblical narrative very far from perfect, gets accolades like this. There must be something deeper unfolding. So Rashi says, Yehuda, Lafi shahichiach esari shaynim, because the first were harshly criticized. Bikanturim, with words that were critical and rebukeful. Hischel Yehuda lasagacha, Yehuda started to back off. Shalay Yechicha, I don't know, al maisa Tamar. He said, I don't want to hear about that story of Tamar again. That's like so long ago. I know. Like, don't tell me again. I know I did the wrong thing. Ukaroi yainkev bedivrei ritzoi. Our father Jacob, he calls to him. But he speaks to him with words of praise. He speaks to him with words that are kind, almost trying to pacify him. Yehuda, he says, lo yata kamoisam, you are not like your brothers. The obvious question is, what do you mean he's not like his brothers? His brothers made mistakes, and he made mistakes. How come their mistakes deserved such harsh criticism in Yaakov's final hours, and Yehuda's mistakes are overlooked entirely, and instead he receives words of affection and wishes to nurture, favor, curry this deeper, more loving relationship? What happened here? Well, first let's look at the words. Yodcha ba'oyref ayvecha. Your hand is in the neck of your enemies. Rashi says this is a futuristic prophecy. This is not something that will happen now, because Yehuda will never fight an enemy again at this point in his life. But his progeny will lead the battles. Not the battles of the conquerance of the land of Eretz Yisrael, for conquest will be achieved by Joshua, who, as we learned yesterday, is from the tribe of Yosef or Ephraim. They will not be the commandos, the Green Berets, Sayeret Matkal, in IDF language, because when it came to conquering Israel, that was the tribe of Gad, and they will be referred to in militaristic terms. But this is be made David. This is in the days of David HaMelech. David represents the ultimate of Shevet Yehuda, Shenemar, as it is written in the book of Shmuel, V'oivai tatali oiref. My enemies have given me neck. That's a euphemism. Just like when a person listens to you, say, he gives me ear. Just like when a person mouths off or says things that you're not interested in listening to, you say, stop giving me lip or mouth. So too, when the enemy flees, you say, he gives me neck. That's a good thing. If your enemies are giving you neck, it's a good thing. Bnei Avicha, they will bow to you. Interestingly, Rashi says nothing about this bowing. But he says, Bnei Avicha, al shem shahoyu minoshim harbe, because the children of Yaakov were from multiple wives. He fathered children with multiple women, with four mothers, four women in the end. Le'omar bnei imecha. He did not use the same verbiage, the language that was employed by Yitzchak, by Isaac, when he blessed his son Yaakov 57 years prior to his passing, without any deathbed drama as we have here. But nonetheless, the verbiage he used was Bnei Imecha, the children of your mother. For Yitzchak had only one wife, and all of his children, Yaakov and Esav, are the children of Rivka. But here, there's a switch in syntax because of the reality. Now, why is Yehuda not being criticized? I mean, Yehuda did inappropriate things. So the Rebbe explains that Yehuda is really the first Baal Tshuva. He acknowledges, when he's faced with the choice of acknowledging wrongdoing and absorbing a tremendous amount of shame, or just making believe, I don't know what's going on, Yehuda has the gumption and the courage to acknowledge his shortcomings, his wrongdoings. It was Yehuda who perhaps abandoned Binyamin, Yosef, but it was Yehuda who went to battle or to bat for Binyamin. Yehuda is the world's first Baal Tshuva. And you'll ask the question, say, but Reuven was a Baal Tshuva too. We hear about Reuven, he's wearing sackcloth and he's fasting. And the Rebbe says something gewaldic. He says, yeah, and who was helped? Who was helped from the sackcloth? Who was helped from his ashes? Who was helped from his morose tshuva? Nobody was helped. In fact, because he was away, Yosef got thrown into the pit. Whereas Yehuda's tshuva rescues Tamar and her children and ultimately Binyamin. So there's a big difference. And that tells us about what tshuva means. Tshuva doesn't just mean to be a contrite soul. Tshuva means that when you mend your mistakes, when you try to rewind your past misdeeds, it's got to make a difference to somebody. The Or HaChaim points out that this is the only one who says Ata. Ata means you, with an aleph. Well, Ayin means now, Ata means you. He doesn't say Reuven Ata, he doesn't say Shimon Ata, and certainly not in the later blessings, he doesn't say the word Ata. He says, because the blessings of the other Shvatim, they were all futuristic. And even Reuven, Yehuda's blessings are futuristic. However, Or HaChaim says, to some degree, they were experienced by Yehuda in his own life as well. So, for example, it says, Yishtachvu lecha bnei avicha. We don't read anywhere of Yehuda's brothers bowing to him, but there was a sense of subservience. They did listen to him, and his example was followed. There was a sense of reverence amongst the brothers, despite the fact that Yosef was the real king. He wasn't the king, but nonetheless, Yehuda was seen as the leader. So that's why we see this business of Ata. As Rashi told us, that this is V'oivai Tatoli Oiref, this is the enemies who give neck. Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor says, this is to say that when Yehuda will go to battle, he has this guarantee that his enemies will flee before him. Now there is no Hishtachava. There is no Hishtachava, as I said. So the Targum Onkelos, the way it's explained by the Mar Peloshin, he says, of course, no bowing, no homage, but there was a sense of Yakdimu L'chasholim. They did speak to you. They extended peace to you. He was treated differently. But as you will see, this is only the beginning of a long trajectory. A trajectory of regality and royalty and monarchy and ultimate dominion. Verse 9. Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Yehuda is a lion cub. So Yehuda, this refers not so much to Yehuda in his own life, but refers also to Yehuda in his future progeny, as we will see. Kora Rovatz Ka'aryeh. Yehuda, you crouched or stretched like a lion. U'l'chilavi, like a young lion, mi'yikimenu, you raised yourself. Who raised yourself like raised himself the way you did? So what's going on here? Now Yaakov is employing this metaphoric imagery where he's talking about a lion and the posture of a lion, the crouching of a lion, the raising of a lion. Says Rashi, Gur Aryeh, a Gur Aryeh is a lion cub, a young lion. And the reason that we speak of a Gur Aryeh, of a young lion specifically with the emphasis, is because the young lion has the most alacrity. The young lion has the most energy. He can run fastest, says Rashbam. Rashi doesn't say that, but Rashi goes straight to the notion of what this refers to. This is a futuristic prophecy, a blessing of the progeny of Yehuda. Al David Nisnabe. This is Yaakov prophesizing once again about King David. Betchila, in the beginning, Gur, like a cub. Why? Because David began his monarchy b'hiyos Shaul Melech Aleinu, when Saul was king over us. And when Saul was king, David HaMelech was a prominent figure. He was the king's son-in-law. He was a war hero. He was a person who inspired the imagination and adulation of the Jewish people, but he wasn't the king. So he started off in the shadows as a second in command, a cub. You were the one who brought or led the Jewish people in and out of battle. But this, the majesty of David HaMelech, the power of his, and force of his leadership continues to wax. And in the end, Aryeh, it's a lion, the Lion King. Shehim lichuhu aleihem, that all of the people of Israel, all the tribes, they appointed or anointed David as king over them. Zeu shatirgim unkelus. Rashi says this is the meaning of how unkelus renders it. Shiltoin yehei b'sheiruyo, which means dominion will be his in the end. Dominion will increase. Dominion will wax. And that's what happened. So, b'tchilasei, it was only dominion. But that was waxed and increased until it was an absolute monarchy. So that's the idea of the Gur Aryeh. As I said, Rashbam emphasizes, he says, that was the nimble and quick nature of the lion cub. Miteref b'ni alisa. Well, this is not only futuristic. This refers actually going back to Yehuda in his present behavior, what he did during his own terrestrial lifetime. And here it gets very interesting, how these blessings kind of, they move seamlessly between past, present, and future. And it's almost impossible without the commentaries to know what's going on here. This is all, everything here is poetic prophecy. None of this is to be taken literal, that Yehuda is a lion who grew a tail and roared. Right, it's all it's euphemism. So here in the metaphor, Rashi says, according to Rashi, there's many opinions about this, but according to Rashi, this is mima shechashadaticha. I was suspicious of you. I thought you did the wrong thing. B'toreif toiraf Yosef. When you said that Yosef was torn, Yosef was destroyed. And I thought, chayiro achalasu. I thought that a wild animal had torn him. Now you read into this. He called you a lion. I thought you had torn Yosef. I thought you were the wild animal. But I was wrong. V'zeu Yehuda. This is Yehuda, Shanim Shel Aryeh, who's metaphorized as the lion. But B'ni Alisa, you raised yourself. You lifted yourself. Salakta es atzmecha. You removed yourself from this. V'amarta, you said to your brothers, as they prepared to kill their own brother, led by Shimon and Levi, you said, V'amarta, ma betza, what's going to be gained this way? It can't be the right thing to do. And they listened to you. V'chein b'harigas Tamar, when it came and they wanted to kill Tamar, the judicial system attacked her. Hoide, you were the one who acknowledged. You said, Tzadka imenu, she's more righteous than I. I'm the guilty one. Nobody could have known. Lefichach kora rovetz. That's why he says you crouch, etc. Now this, and because you did this, Rashi is explaining now the present and then immediate future notion. We started with David HaMelech. We went back to the future. Then we came back to the present. We talked about, or the past really. The past is what Yehuda did. And now again, back to the future. And because of this, says Rashi, Kora Ravatz, you'll be able to stretch or crouch. I mean, there's this idea of peace. B'yimei Shloima, this will be in the day of Shlomo HaMelech. So in other words, as a reward for your concern for Yosef and for Tamar, that you demonstrated concern for your fellow and for their welfare, you'll be able to figuratively crouch or lie down like a lion, like an awesome lion that everybody's afraid of. The lion doesn't have to roar. The lion doesn't have to make noise or threatening motions. The lion, just by virtue a dint of his presence, instills a sense of awe or fear. Nobody wants to provoke the lion. And this is how it was during the days of Shlomo HaMelech, that the entirety of the reign of King Solomon was undisturbed by wars. There was no violence. Wait, do you think there was nobody that was jealous of the Jewish people? Nobody is jealous. This was the time when the kingdom of Israel was at its apex, its apogee. But do you know why? They were afraid. It's like a majestic lion. So this is a fascinating pasuk that goes future to David HaMelech, back to Yehuda, and then even further into the future, the reign of King Solomon Shlomo HaMelech. Now, the Sephorno says something very interesting over here. He says, the word B'ni could be interpreted as you, my son. The word B'ni can also be interpreted as Reuven, pardon me, Yosef, my son. Alisa, you went away. You stepped back from B'ni, from my son Yosef. When they were attacking B'ni, my son, you said, no, no, no. This is not the right thing to do. You were the one who backed off. So he gets credit for that. And now, the crowning blessing, La Yasor Shevet Mi Yehuda. In the end, no tribe will depart from Judah's dominion. Umechaykek Mi Bein Raglav, from him will issue forth the lawgivers of the Jewish people, meaning the great scholars of the Sanhedrin. Ad Ki Avo Shiloh, until Shiloh comes. Velo, and it is for him, Yikas Amim, all the nations will assemble. They will not assemble to prosecute Jerusalem. They will not assemble to point accusing fingers at the Jewish people, as they are going to be assembling in Paris soon. But when Mashiach will come, they will assemble. They will assemble to hear the teachings of Mashiach. They will assemble to be inspired by his presence.
Why did he get the nod and not Yosef at this point?
Why does he get the nod and not Yosef? Well, you didn't get the Yosef's blessings. Do that tomorrow. Yosef's blessings are quite remarkable. Yeah. But Mashiach comes from Yehuda. Rashi says, L'yosef shevet mi Yehuda. In verse 9, we already began to speak of the future. Even in verse 8, we spoke about the future. We talked about David HaMelech's wars. But in verse 9, we speak about King David's royalty, monarchy and majesty. And in verse 9 here, we come to this crowning blessing, La Yasser Shevet, no tribe will depart. Explains Rashi, from when Yehuda assumes the throne, which is in the time of David HaMelech, Mi David ve'elech, up until David HaMelech, there were different rulers, different kings, different important people. Verse 10, Rashi. And this means, even in a time when there is no monarchy for the Jewish people, even in a time when we will not have a government, or we won't have self-determination politically and legally, nonetheless, there will be leaders, Jewish leaders that will come from the tribe of Yehuda, who will lead the nation. Elu Rashi Golias Shebebavel. These are the heads of the exiles, referred to as exilarches. Shereidim Esa'am B'Shevet, that they will ensure that the people are going to follow the straight and narrow, or they will ensure that they will still be doing what has to be done, right? So they'll continue to be the acknowledged leaders, they'll have this regency, and they'll do so with a scepter of regency. So here Shevet doesn't mean, like Rashi's first interpretation, doesn't mean a tribe will not depart from Yehuda, it means the scepter of regency, of royalty, will not depart from Yehuda, which means even when there won't be monarchy for the Jewish people, there will still be leaders of the Jewish people. Shememunim al pi ha-malchus, they were appointed by the local governments. The local governments said, we don't want to govern the Jewish people, we don't want to police them, you do it. And who did they choose in Bavel? They chose the leaders of David HaMelech. Let me add, just take the liberty to add, that in the Torah leadership, we know that for Jewish people, for many, 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 many centuries, in fact, for millennia, we did not really have political leadership. We had shtadlonim. We had some Jewish people who became involved in foreign governments. Some of them were great tzaddikim, like Reb Shmuel HaNogid, was one of the great rishonim, who became almost like a vice prime minister in Spain. But for the most part, the leaders of the Jewish people did not have any political power whatsoever. Who were the leaders? As our sages put it, man malki, who is royalty? Rabbanan, the sages. They sat on an imaginary throne. They wielded power by dint of their spiritual charisma and the Torah teachings. They couldn't force anybody to do anything. And yet, by and large, their word was absolute to thousands or millions of Jews. Think of the greatest sages. Think of Rashi or Rambam. Rashi, for sure, we know comes from the tribe of Yehuda. Many, many of these great leaders came from the tribe of Yehuda. That was very, very common, that the great leaders of the Jewish people over the ages came from the tribe of Yehuda, and specifically the seed of David HaMelech. The leader of Spanish Jewry, Dan Yitzchak Abarbanel, direct link back to David HaMelech. Rashi, direct link back to David HaMelech. And many others. David Luria, the family of the Luria family, the Shalah Kaddish, many of these people. In fact, our Rebbe has a direct lineage back to David HaMelech. The Rebbe is a direct descendant of the Tzemach Tzedek. The Tzemach Tzedek's name, well, at least his father's name, was Altshuler, and he was a direct descendant, Ben Achaben, of the Mitzudas David, Mitzudas Tzion. And Mitzudas David, Mitzudas Tzion, had a direct lineage, Aksav Yichas, going back to David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. And the Alter Rebbe's family is from the Maral of Prague. Maral of Prague, once again, Shevet Yehuda, family of David HaMelech. So Rashi doesn't say this exactly, but I think this is implied also. This is Rashi says is documentable within the framework of Torah literature, but I think this, what I'm saying, is historically true. It doesn't mean absolute. I never heard anywhere that Rambam was necessarily from the seed of David HaMelech, although I would not be the least bit surprised if in fact he was. Okay. So we see here, perhaps Rashi alludes to this. In the next Rashi, he does talk about the sages. He doesn't talk about political leadership. He doesn't talk about power at all. He talks about Talmidim. These are the disciples, the Talmidei Chachamim. Elu Nesiei Be'esh Eretz Yisrael. These are the leaders of Eretz Yisrael. Who are the leaders of Eretz Yisrael? Who is the most famous sage who led the Sanhedrin? Hillel. And Hillel was, at least from his mother, from the family of David HaMelech. And Hillel established a dynasty. And what were the children of Hillel known as? They were called Rabban. Rabban is a conjunction of Rebbe and Nasi. Because Rebbe and Nasi was the president. He was the spiritual president, leader of the Jewish people. And that was because they had this lineage going back once again to David HaMelech, this connection to the tribe of Yehuda. And this will continue, which is why I gave you the various examples. It will continue ad ki yavai Shiloh, until Shiloh arrives. Who is Shiloh? 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 Melech HaMashiach! This is the anointed king. This is the Messiah. Why is he called Shiloh? So Rashi says Shiloh is an acronym, a conjunctive word. She Hamlucha Shaloi, for majesty, monarchy is his. And Unkelus renders it the same way. Unkelus says that this is connected to Melech HaMashiach, Shehamalchus Shaloi. Didilei hi Malchusa, for whom majesty is. Now Rashi says, there's a Medrash Agoda, because Shiloh is not, it would sound more like Milo, if you want to have Malchus Shiloh, or Mishlo. Shiloh is like very, it sounds Shiloh, but how do you get to Malchus? The word Malchus seems to be missing there. So therefore, Rashi adds a Medrash Agoda, expounded by our sages, that the reason that we use the word not Malchuso or Malchulo, but Shiloh, is because Shiloh. Shiloh means that the nations will come and bring tribute to David, to Mashiach. Shanemar, as it's written in the 76th chapter of Tillim, Yoivilu Shai Lamoire. They will come with a sense of awe and reverence, and they will bring gifts or tribute to Mashiach. And he will gather the nations. Asifa Sa'anim, says Rashi. Okay. So Shiloh is Mashiach, and there's going to be this incredible flowering of awe, of reverence for Jewish leadership. Mashiach will be, if you will, the dominant figure, the charismatic leader, the spiritual force that governs the whole world. Let's take a look in the Biurei HaChumash. Rebbe begins this commentary by quoting the Baal HaTurim. The Baal HaTurim says, Yavo Shiloh. Now the Baal HaTurim has this incredible way of unlocking the meaning of the verses by adding up the gematria. Page Shin Nun. By adding up the gematria, adding up the numerical equivalent of the words. And many of the things that Rashi will say, for example, the Baal HaTurim will demonstrate that it's in the words just by adding up the numerology of the letters. It's incredible. It just shows the level of truth of Torah, like on so many levels. Even the numerology adds up. So maybe Baal HaTurim was one of the first ones to crack the Torah codes, secret codes of Torah. So he says, Yavo Shiloh, Shiloh will come. He says, Bigematria Mashiach. That gives you the numeric equivalent of Mashiach. Shiloh, but Shiloh himself, this is Bigematria Moshe. That's the gematria, the numeric equivalent of Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu, who's from the tribe of Levi. And so, we may ask the question this morning, will the real Mashiach please rise? Is Mashiach Moshe, or the tribe of Levi, or is Mashiach Yehuda, the son of David? And the Baal HaTurim seems to say something that on the surface appears entirely contradictory. He says, Yavo Shiloh, Shiloh comes, that's Mashiach. But who is Shiloh? He says, Shiloh is Moshe. Shiloh is Moshe. This is the blessings of David HaMelech. This is the blessings of Yehuda. This is the blessings of L'yosar Shevet Me'Yehuda, that did not depart from Yehuda. How to get back to Moshe Rabbeinu? He's not from that lineage. He's not from that tribe. It's true that it says Moshe Melech Hayah. Moshe was like a king. But how did that work out to become that Shiloh, who Rashi clearly says is Mashiach, whether Melucha Shiloh or Shiloh, it's Mashiach. How did it become to be dubbed Moshe? So the Rebbe unlocks the code. Baal HaTurim unlocks a code, and the Rebbe further unlocks the code. So code should make sense to us. Yeshleimar bebiur remezer. The Rebbe suggests this is really the deeper message that Balaturim is giving us. Mashmousa shel geula ha'asida. The meaning, the intimation of futuristic redemption, absolute redemption, which will be brought about through Mashiach. What does it mean? Jewish people will be powerful, will freak everybody out, shake them down, will have the biggest weapons. What does that mean? This is just the protocols of the elders of Zion, ready to control the world. What do Jewish people yearn for? What do they hope for? What is the age of Mashiach? What is it about? The age of Jewish power? Jewish lives matter? What will be when Mashiach comes? And the answer is, when Mashiach will come, there will be gilui elikus ba'olam kulei. The whole world will know God. And since we are the teachers, or should be the ambassadors of God's messages or light, and the idea that God's presence will be known by everybody, so who will represent that? Who will teach that? Who will show that way? Mashiach, the Jewish people. But the idea of Mashiach is that God's presence, God's name will be known. As it says, V'hoya Hashem l'melech ha'kal ha'aretz, God will be king over the whole world. Not Mashiach will be king. We don't worship a person. It's not a person rising to greatness. Mashiach's job is to usher in God's dominion, God's majesty, God's greatness and kingship. V'yoymahu, on that day, Hashem echad u'shmei echad. God will be one, his name will be one. That's another riddle that's beyond the next 3 minutes. What that means, why we use that terminology. But that's the terminology we use. Hashem echad u'shmei echad, which means that our relationship with God is going to be an overt and obvious one. That our relationship with God will not be characterized by obfuscation, by concealment, by a lack of knowledge or appreciation or clarity. The world, if you will become transparent. The truth of the world, reality and existence will become available, free. Everybody will see it. Because after the cover is eclipsed, the concealment and the cloud is removed. As it says, Es ruach hatuma, the spirit or cloud of impurity will be banished. You know, you have a cloudy day, you can't see the sun, and then suddenly there's a strong wind, and almost instantaneously the clouds are scattered and the sun is shining. That's Mashiach. That's this thick clouds that seem to obscure everything. In one moment, Mashiach will come, blow all the clouds away, and you'll see a brilliant sky, and you'll see the light, the sunlight. La amita shel davar, truth be told, who began this process? Who begins the process of introducing God's presence to the world, of creating a situation where God's presence is known and felt and seen by all? Who begins that process? Moshe. That gilui happens through Moshe Rabbeinu. Shekein amatzer shesharar ba'ilum b'shas matan Torah. When the Torah was given through Moshe, it was me'ein amatzer sheyiskayim lasid lavi. The world was, for a brief frame of time, futuristic. It was a perfect world. From the level of divine revelation, God's presence was, so to speak, revealed for all to see. His batlusi shalaylam kuli, the whole world stood in respectful silence, in awe and reverence. As it says, the Medrash says, Tzipor leitzavach, even a bird didn't chirp. Ha'olam shaysik, the world was silent, says the Shmais Rabbah. Behein mebechina silukim shal dvarim ha'mastinim, the Jewish people had no obstacles. There was nothing to get in the way of doing the right thing. It says, paskazu ha'masam, there's toxicity. Literally, their sweat stopped. Why do we sweat? We sweat because we have toxins. And our body gets rid of those toxins by secreting liquid. And that washes. It's like a natural shower. It stinks, by the way. But it washes off. It gets rid of the poison from inside your body. And that's why you wake up in the morning needing a shower. Because your body is hard at work excreting and getting rid of all the toxins and poisons. And then you're cleansed. And then you rinse it off. That's your shower afterwards. So the body takes an inner shower, an internal shower. And then you just finish off the process. Now, that's because we have toxins or poisons. But what will happen when Mashiach comes? We won't need showers. There'll be no toxins. Only toxins stink. Holiness doesn't smell. Soap will be out of business, man. Forget about it. What do you need business for? When Mashiach will come, David, it's not necessary. You won't need it. So when Mashiach came, when the Torah was given, it says, Paskazu Masam. The negativity ceased. They didn't have that toxicity. The problem was that wonderful, beautiful moment. It was just temporary. It faded so quickly. And matarasai, the purpose was because they lost their bnei Yisrael, sakoyach lahavias ageula. The whole purpose of the Torah being given to us, and that mass, incredible, in many ways, unprecedented revelation, an unreplicated revelation so far, was only so that the Jewish people would be empowered so they could bring Mashiach. And when Mashiach will come, then that frame of time will be recaptured. The way things were when the Torah was given will become the reality for the whole world. And this, says the Rebbe, this is probably what the Balaturim was saying. He said that the meaning of Shiloh, who Rashi tells us is Mashiach, is the gematria of Meisha. Because Meisha, who shahochel begilei elikos, he begins the process, he initiates this incredible procedure, the evolutionary process of geula, of redemption, which is Shiloh. He unleashes it. It is from Moshe that we have the power to unlock redemption. Aval Yachad Zeus, Moshe Rabbeinu himself, that's not Mashiach. Yavai Shiloh, when Shiloh comes into its full fruition, when Shiloh reaches full maturation, Yavai, it arrives. That's Begimatria Mashiach, not Moshe. Amnam Moshe Hachal Begilizeh, he certainly began it. He initiated, he catalyzed. When will the Mosaic revelation reach its full perfection and become unfurled entirely? Because Matan Torah was just temporary. That's Ayideh HaMashiach. It's through Mashiach, which from the time of Yehuda, not Levi, not Moshe Rabbeinu, Yavo Gilui Elokus Lidei Poel. So it's Mashiach's coming that will actualize the energy of Moshe, the accomplishment of Moshe will only really reach its perfection through the coming of Mashiach. And that's, by the way, as Rebbe explains in that same Sicha, why it says Moshe hu goel rishon, Moshe hu goel achron. Moshe was the first redeemer, Moshe is the last redeemer. And the obvious question is, but Moshe is a Levi, how could he be the last redeemer? We know that the tribal distinctions are not only lineage or genetic, but actually also spiritual. A different tribe means a different neshama, because it's a different path in Avedas Hashem. A different path in serving God means that there's some kind of neshama. A Kohen is not just somebody who has a certain gene. You can have that gene and be a Gentile if your mother's not Jewish. A Kohen is somebody who has a spiritual soul that he can do certain things. And the Levi is a different kind of neshama. Yehuda's neshama lends itself to monarchy, to majesty, to leadership. So how do you work that out? How do you work that out? Is it Mashiach? Is Moshe the Mashiach? A Levi or from Yehuda? So the Rebbe says, it's Levi who initiates the process. But it's Yehuda who brings it to its completion. And that's why Shiloh begematria Moshe, the real Mashiach, by the power of Moshe, the real Mashiach is Ben David from the tribe of Yehuda. May we merit to see the real Mashiach rise very speedily and in our days. Amen.
Why not blend and have a hybrid? Both.